This is Beyond the Divide, traversing the experiences in the world of disability. I'm Harrison Kirkwood, your host for this podcast series, produced by Singleton Council and proudly supported by the New South Wales State Government. Rachel Bajan is a Singleton local and the CEO of Whitmore Disability Service in Singleton. Rachel also has lived experience with her brother, Nathan, who has Down syndrome and joins us on the podcast today. Hey, Rachel, how you going?
Good. How are you, Harry?
Well, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. So, Rachel, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So, I'm a Singleton local. So, I actually was born in Musselbrook. Don't hold that against me. And
never. What the...
Moved to Singleton in 1990. I pretty much grew up here in town, moved away in my 20s, explored the world, moved overseas. And then I came back for a little pit stop and met my now husband, then had three beautiful children and have been living here for probably the last 10 years, working for Whitmore Disability Services in town.
Okay, great. And how many siblings are there in your family?
So there's three of us. There is my older brother and then my younger brother, Nathan. Nathan, my younger brother, has, as you mentioned before, Down syndrome. So, yeah, that's where I got my start and into the disability world.
Yeah, okay. So just in general, what was your childhood like growing up and living regionally?
It was awesome. I loved growing up in Singleton. I have very fond memories of getting on my push bike, riding around the streets with my friends. I think back in the day with Singleton, there was lots of open areas, you know, lots of tyre swings and exploring all the bushland and stuff around here. So it was...
the simple pleasures.
Yeah, the simple pleasures. It was great. And it was, you know, a lot of community stuff. So my family was very involved with the Baptist church here, and we would go to his kids, which was like a youth group thing, you know, the netball community, little athletics, just lots of community engagement. Yeah, so yeah, it was a good time, a nice, easy time, yeah.
Living regionally does have some disadvantages in being close to other services in metro cities, but there is really something special about it, you know, that community spirit, enjoying the simple pleasures of outdoor
lives,
like you say, those tyre swings, mm-hmm. running amok,
yeah,
big wide open spaces.
And just knowing that wherever you sort of went, you knew somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
Straight and stop and have a chat.
Yeah, I mean, that was good and bad. You could never get away with anything because someone would always tell your parents about what you're up to. But, you know, also if you were ever in need or in trouble or you felt unsafe, I always felt like there was someone you could turn to that for help, which was awesome.
A tight-knit community.
Yeah,
100%. That wanted together.
Mm-hmm.
So when your brother, younger brother Nathan, was born, how was that for the family unit? Had your family had much experience in the world of disability prior to your brother Nathan coming along, or was it a bit of a shock and challenging in that regard?
It definitely was an introduction to the disability world. So, you know, no one in our extended family or anything had previously had a disability. So I was only recently talking with my mum about what it was like as a mum to find out you had a child with a disability. And so Nathan was born at Singleton Hospital here. And she said as soon as he was born, basically, they had some indications that, you know, there was maybe some disability with Nathan. So then the first week of them doing tests and things like that was quite stressful for my mum and my dad. And then he was obviously diagnosed with Down syndrome. So at the time as well, I think there was less education around disabilities, and I think people just didn't quite understand what it meant to have a child with a disability. So my mum had some difficulties with that as a, you know, as a mum growing up in a town, smaller town with limited resources. You know, early intervention plays a huge part with children with disabilities, and definitely living regionally was difficult. We used to drive to Kurri as a family a lot. I think that was the nearest place you could go for any type of early childhood intervention support at the time. So,
and do you think that people's lack of understanding come from a place of just blissful ignorance, of a place of just not thinking about it or considering it? Or do you think there was stigmatization there and an intentional exclusion in those years of growing up?
Complex question. I think a bit of both. So I distinctly remember my mum telling me a story about when we were younger, taking us to the Singleton pool, and Nathan was waddling around in the little kids area, and another mum had her child in the same area and kept looking at Nathan and looking at Nathan, and in the end came and picked her daughter up and took her out of the pool so she wasn't in the same spot as him. And I wonder if that was about a lack of education, of like thinking, you know, was she going to catch something, or, you know, was he going to hurt her or in some way or something along those lines? And, you know, mum did say that that happened quite often when Nathan was younger, but we're talking, you know, that's the early 90s. So I think we have come a long way since then. So I think there is a lot still to be done around the educational piece of what it means to have a disability. And one of the, you know, huge gaps I see as well is in the schooling system now that I have my own three young children, is just there's not enough spoken about in schools about just we should be educating our children around disabilities, like what it means for someone who has autism or what it means for someone who has Down syndrome, how to actually include them in things. So not just like, okay, this is Tommy and Tommy has a special ed teacher who's with him, but
yeah,
you know, how do we actually have people with disabilities immersed into the same childhood that we're brought up with?
Meaningfully engaged.
Meaningfully, exactly.
And not just sort of a tick a box approach where, oh, so this support's in place.
Yes.
People valuing the person with a disability, wanting to spend time with them and enjoying their company.
Yeah.
Seeing those skills and abilities that they can offer, not mm-hmm. just focusing on the deficits or the things that they don't have.
Yeah.
Because if you're looking at what they do have, you might find some things of shared interest or joy in that relationship. So like you say, that true inclusion, that
yeah.
meaningful participation is really important, and that is actual inclusion. It's not just saying that we should do this or make yeah. sure we've ticked all the boxes.
Yeah. Like my kids, I see it in them because my whole life is so immersed around disabilities, and they've got an uncle, obviously, with a disability. So for them, they're so comfortable around people with disabilities. They don't feel, when I see them interact with someone with a disability, it's just the same way of interacting with anybody. And I would love to see all children, you know, growing up with that awareness. And then obviously that will lead into adulthood. And then, you know, when we're looking at things like people getting placed into employment opportunities or true change in accessing communities and transportation and things, these are all going to be led by adults then who have had early intervention themselves
yeah.
to learn about people with a disability and that true, like you said, that true meaning of the word inclusion.
Including it early.
Yeah.
And instilling it as an expectation that everyone would be treated
yeah,
the same.
Just like a subject in the schooling system, essentially. Yeah.
And did the challenges change for Nathan over the years, Rachel, perhaps childhood to adulthood or?
Mm-hmm. They definitely have. So I think when Nathan was younger, a lot of his challenges were around, you know, what supports we were able to get him about inclusion, of getting him into the right school with the right teacher's aides, those, how we're going to get him transported to school and back, those types of things. And now when we delve more into the adulthood, it's for Nathan, it's more around what he's missing out on now. So, you know, it's things like, you know, he's seen people get married and he's seen people have children and he's seen people get their driver's license and drive a car. And those have been very hard challenges as a sister as well to see, because you obviously you want the best for your brother and you want him to be happy and I tried very hard for a lot of years to try and work out, oh, how can I find him a wife, and yeah. how can I allow him to be able to do all these things?
Yeah.
And it's almost a challenge for, as much as it is for him, it's a challenge for a family as well, to sort of, I think, for everyone to come to terms with, you know, some people with disabilities can do a lot of those things, and sometimes it's just not possible for others. So we have just tried to focus more on like what Nathan can do, and try to talk to Nathan also about like what he can achieve. So those are things like his employment that he has as a social enterprise, and giving him that meaning in that regard. I did try to let Nathan drive a car one time. I don't know if I should say this online, but I actually took him out into the bushland in a paddock basher. Yeah. And I was like, no, you know, he wants his driver's license. I'm going to just give him a crack at it. I told him to get in the front seat. He got in there and he put his foot on the accelerator and we went like a meter and he put his hands up and he was like, never again. I'm done. So his driver's license actually took care of himself and I didn't have to worry about that one.
Well, on the driving experience, I've had a similar experience. My brother took me out in a paddock driving at home.
Yeah.
You know, me being blind, and it's like, oh, you know, come on, Harry, I'll teach you to drive and we can have some fun. So we did it on one occasion.
Yeah.
And then on the second occasion, we went back for another attempt. And this time we're in my other brother's car. So the brother teaching me to drive was much more cautious and much more concerned about how well it would go, given that it wasn't his car. We weren't going to be in any danger ourselves because we're only going like 20 k's an hour.
Yeah, but
there was a noticeable change, and it wasn't his car that we were driving in.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I think sometimes everyone should be allowed to have those experiences. So, you know, I think that's great that, you know, that was something that you got to experience as well. And
the ideas of belonging and love and friendship and home.
Yes.
They're not tangible things that a service provider or the NDIS can provide. It's the journey of traveling through life and having other opportunities such as employment and socialization that
is
more meaningful, intangible experiences come from.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, they're the most important for all humans, including people with disability, but the social and societal barriers that people with disability face make it harder to get those feelings of belonging and identity and friendship, which are so important to our well-being. And
and that's why even with Whitmore's for that service provider, a lot of the focus that I do as a CEO there is around that feeling. You know, I want the clients to feel that Whitmore's is a safe environment, a place of belonging for them, that these are their social connections. And for some of them, it is their only social connection. So we have social events, but we also have times where we just have a night up at Whitmore's where the big screen TV's on and the guys are watching the footy and we're eating pizza and having a drink. So it's that sense of belonging for them and that, that community sense feel. Yeah.
Was it the need for the community sense, feel, and your personal experiences with your brother that drew you to this line of work, or is that just an assumption that I'm making?
No, you're 100% spot on. So I did have dreams of becoming a singer, believe it or not, Harry, when I was younger, and I sung many times as a young primary school student in the shower at home thinking I was going to be famous and on a world stage, but that never happened for me, unfortunately. My voice was not up to scratch.
That's okay. You're touching many lives in other ways.
Well, you know.
More impactful ways, perhaps, than being a singer.
Well, I hope so. So Nathan definitely has shaped the journey I've taken on my career path. Just not only him, but like seeing him with his friends at school. And I love, like, some of the best people in my life are people with disabilities. And some of them I've got lifelong friendships with, and, you know, there's so much that a person with a disability can give, and the relationships can be so, they're so genuine, and they really care about me as much as I care about them and what they're up to. So been in the sector now for over 15 years, and I have to admit, like, there is, I know it sounds very cliche, but there is never a day that feels like work, working in the sector. And a lot of my staff would say the same thing, that, you know, time goes so quickly because there were always just, there's always something new, something interesting happening. And
a new challenge to tackle together.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, I have this little phrase of ordinary but extraordinary. They can be everyday people without necessarily specific skills or qualifications, mm-hmm. but with a willingness, a commitment, and a genuine desire to make a difference in the lives of others. Those yeah. type of people can be the most impactful people
definitely.
In someone else's life.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can change and transform a life. And you can't always measure that in terms of, did I achieve something today or how many notes did I get written? Mm-hmm. That impact is so great on a person's life and it's chipped away at slowly over time.
Yeah.
So when you look back on your career and what you've achieved in recent years, it's a really great feeling, I'm sure, to witness the contribution that you can make.
Mm.
And you're obviously, you know,
yeah,
doing
it's,
that.
It's rewarding, but it's equally rewarding for me as well in terms of like, the impact people with disabilities have made on my life and, you know, just the way that I view things differently now. So I'm a lot more patient. Don't let the little things get to me as much because I see people with disabilities and the things that they have to overcome and it makes things that annoy people seem so insignificant sometimes. And I think that's the blessing that people with disabilities have given to me is that you know, who cares if I've got to be stuck in traffic for an extra 5 minutes? It really isn't the end of the world. So, you know, it's definitely shifted my perspective, yeah, of the world and the way things are. So,
and we're familiar and in tune with the disability story, but what about how society is going in supporting people with disability? What is society currently doing well and what do we need to do better?
Look, I think we've come a long way and I think back to how people with disabilities were not allowed in the school system and they weren't, you know, a lot of people with disabilities were institutionalized. That wasn't that long ago. So, you know, in terms of coming from there to where we are here, it's leaps and bounds. But, you know, we touched a little bit on it before that I think there's still a lot of gaps in the education of educating our kids in schools. There's also probably a little bit more work to be done in the space of open employment, you know, what it means to employ somebody with a disability. I think there's a lot of businesses that maybe are still a bit hesitant or scared of the unknown of what that looks like. So, yeah, I think in terms of where society is with that, we still need to navigate our way a little bit further around how to put those support systems in place to make a real change and not just with the intention of change. So,
And what role does the NDIS have in supporting people with disabilities and what are some of the challenges that are existing?
Ooh, complex this one. Look, my personal experience with the NDIS as a sister of a brother with a disability is that when it's done right, it's great. If you get a NDIS package that is not huge but not minimal but just in the middle and it can really support somebody, you know, with Nathan, I make sure his is really structured in a way that it is going to last the length of his plan. You know, we only use registered providers who are audited and have checks and things like that. So for us, that works. What I've seen as a challenge in that space recently is obviously the fraud that can go on in the NDIS scheme. And I think what's happened is that people have taken advantage of a system, not all people, but, you know, some people have taken advantage of this system. And now what we're seeing is a flow-on effect of that, of people having reduced NDIS plans, the government not willing to give out early intervention support to youth, the government not wanting to give out larger packages for supported independent living. So I understand where the government is coming from. They're trying to recoup some of this fraud money, but it unfortunately is also having an impact on people who were doing the right thing. And we're seeing more of NDIS packages being halved. All the way that they allow people to access the funding for those packages is quite difficult. So it's a complex system. It's one I think that definitely needs some more checks and some more auditing procedures in place, but I have seen it do great things for people with disabilities as well. So
if there was one change that could be made to improve the NDIS, do you have an idea what that may be?
That's okay.
That's hard with the one change.
Yeah, or any changes.
I think those like tighter auditing processes. So it's good to have like non-registered and registered in terms of, you know, sometimes there's areas that don't have any registered providers around, and so you need those non-registered people who are helping to still offer support. But, I mean, a lot of the fraud when you read through the government documents does come from non-registered because they don't have the auditing processes in place. So I think if they tightened that for non-registered providers as well, it would make a huge difference in the way funding spent, and maybe then there won't be so much mismatched funding, which can then go directly back to people with disabilities to use it correctly and enrich their lives and offer them supports.
How funding is utilised and appropriately spent is rightly a concern, and transparency for the community to have that information.
Yeah.
But do you think in the wake of that, sometimes people in society forget the positive contribution the NDIS makes to the economy in terms of the number of jobs that are created, support workers who do turn up to work and have a job, and supporting someone else that really goes back into the economy. And without the NDIS, a lot of people would be out of jobs, I feel. And personally, I feel that that narrative gets lost a lot in the media when we talk about the cost and expenditure of NDIS. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah. Oh, look, you only have to look at election time and see the amount of people who are bad-mouthing the NDIS and voting based on platforms that are not really supporting the system. And, yeah, it's not really a fair go, because I agree, like the system does work. It offers... I know in Singleton alone, I mean, we have quite a few disability service providers here in town. So there's a whole lot of employment that wouldn't be here had we not had that. Our social enterprises that we run are based on supported employment funding from the government to have people with disabilities working. And that is all money that then gets turned back into the economy here as well. So, you know, we're providing services to people in the community. And yeah, I feel that it would be good to get more stories out there about what the NDIS has allowed somebody to do. It'd be great if there was some sort of platform that showcased that more often than just hearing stories about fraud and why this wasn't done right and this wasn't done right, but more around, okay, well, the NDIS allowed this person to get housing, or the NDIS has allowed this person to learn how to access the community through public transport because they've been able to have a support worker take them from A to B. So those kinds of little wins would be beneficial, and maybe that's on the government to promote that more, and they need to get the messaging across about that. But I think it's also important for service providers and people with a disability to share their success stories as well. So
not just the bad.
Not just the bad, yeah. Because we all know about the bad.
We need to know the good.
Yeah.
And we're inspired to do more when we see good.
Absolutely, absolutely.
In terms of being inspired, what would be your hope for Nathan, I guess, if we use Nathan as your personal connection today, and using Nathan's story more broadly for people with disability? What would be your hope for your brother in life in the future?
Look, I guess every sister's hope is just that their brother feels like I want Nathan to feel fulfilled. I want him to feel like his life mattered. I want him to feel that he didn't miss out on too many opportunities, that he can look back on his life and be proud and happy with what he did. So I'll continue to fight and look at new ways of improving services that allow him and others with disabilities to be able to have access to those types of, you know, to be able to allow them to achieve the goals that he wants, and,
yeah,
the memorable moments. So want him to have a life just as good as my life, basically.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a touching and succinct way to put it.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing so many of your personal insights and being comfortable to do that with me today. It's been a great privilege to hear them, and also informative to hear it from a service continuity point of view with you being the CEO of Whitmore and how the two merge and how we all need to merge to come together to better support people with disabilities.
Perfect. That is a perfect way to say it, Harry. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.